Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Stafford Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, April 15th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had a little pop in gold today, up 620 right now in the New York spot, 620 on gold at 1,200 and 3,480. Silver's up 7.07 at 16.32. Platinum was down 6 at 989, and palladium was up 6 at 572. Strange. 6, up 6, down 6. Yeah. Anyway, so gold had a good day today. Silver had a nice day. And we have the IMF meetings going on, and the G20 meetings we'll talk here about in just a little bit. The USDX today is down 0.24 at 94.71, and crude oil was down 1.16 at 40.34. And the paper markets today, some pressure throughout the day, not much. The Dow was down 30 points at 17,897. The NASDAQ down 8 at 49.38, and the S&P down 2 at 2,080. 10-year yield down 0.03 at 175. That's 1.75. And all Asian foreign markets were down overnight. And are you there, Al?
Yes, I am.
Did you go away?
No.
No?
My vacation doesn't start until tomorrow.
Oh.
I have a two-day vacation every week. That's Saturday and Sunday. I'll be leaving right after the show. I'll be departing.
Oh, okay.
Vacation.
Uh-huh. Well, a group of 20, the world's top financial chiefs today, renewed their commitment, Al. They're going to use their budgets to juice the lackluster global growth, and warned against over-reliance on monetary policy. So they are reiterating their commitment. They're going to use all the tools necessary, whether it be monetary, fiscal, structural, individually, and collectively, to foster confidence and strengthen growth.
Doesn't that just
make you all warm and fuzzy?
It makes me so confident, Melody, that I may take a three-day vacation instead of a two-day
vacation. It makes me so confident I'm going to go out and buy more gold and silver. But
you know, it's interesting. They're talking about they're going to do whatever they can with monetary policy and fiscal policy, Greenspan is in the news just in the last on CNBC just recently, and he's in the headline is Greenspan. Monetary policy has done everything it can. And Greenspan has said this. This is probably the third time he's come out with this this argument in the course of maybe the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks that I've heard it, in any case. And former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan said Thursday that monetary policy has reached the outward bounds of its effectiveness without another round of quantitative easing. In other words, Greenspan is arguing there's no reason to try another round of quantitative easing. It's done all it can. All right, that appears to be his argument, and he's saying we can't do anymore. All right, now that might be true, but I wonder if Greenspan is really saying that the Federal Reserve is so broke that it's no longer capable of another round of quantitative easing. Is he saying that quantitative easing can't? You've done all you can with it, and gee, we'd like to help, but there's no point in doing further. Is that what he's saying, or is he saying we're broke and we can't do another round of quantitative easing? Whether he is saying the one or the other is not necessarily it's interesting, but it's not necessarily critical. The point is, there isn't going to be any more quantitative easing. At least Greenspan doesn't think there's going to be any more. He goes on, he says, monetary policy has done everything it can. There's no real evidence that we're getting an impact on lending, on the economy picking up. They're not having positive results. They spend all this money and they reduce interest rates to next to nothing. And in terms of monetary policy, it hasn't been effective. All right. When we say monetary policy, we are talking about policy of the Federal Reserve. They're the ones that run monetary policy. The government runs fiscal policy. All right. Different things. And he goes on, Greenspan said he disagreed with the International Monetary Fund managing director Christine Lagarde that negative interest rates create a net positive effect. He didn't think that negative interest rates create a net positive effect. I think negative interest rates are simply an act of irrational behavior that's evidence of economists grasping at whatever straws, real or imaginary, they can find before the whole thing goes right down the pipe. This is the act, to me. Negative interest rates is the act of a drowning group of economists. Greenspan goes on and he said the fundamental problems are anemic productivity growth and flagging corporate profits, which can be traced to too much entitlement spending as the world's population ages. All right. This is at least the second time I've heard Greenspan complain there's too much entitlement spending. It might be the third. Now, what I think he's signaling here is the Federal Reserve and or the central banks are intentionally telling the governments, you got to stop handing out all this free money. All right, to the retired people and to the poor people. They are going to, right now, they're saying there's too much entitlement spending, or at least Greenspan saying that. And I suspect that he's not just speaking for himself. I suspect that he is speaking. He's the guy who's been brought in to make statements that the Federal Reserve can't say by itself. They say, Alan, would you come over here and break the bad news? The point to all of this is that there is likely to be a trend over the course of the next several years where entitlement spending is reduced. Not because people have to be mean, not because they want to let people starve, but because, look, they're broke. They don't have the money to continue to play this game. And they're going to have to tighten their belts. And when the government tightens its belt, it doesn't mean its belt. I mean, the people in Congress and the Senate and the government employees, they'll still get paid. But the people who are waiting on their entitlements from government, and that will be the poor who are on welfare, the rich who are on subsidies, and the mature who are waiting for their retirement, their pensions. These people are going to see some sort of a problem. I saw a report just last week or so that 70% of the government's budget is spent on entitlements right now. It can't continue. Right? You can say it's good. You can say it's bad. You can say a bunch of things. But I'm just saying it can't continue. We can't spend 70% of the government's money can't be spent on entitlements. And it means, among other things, that you, if you are a person who relies on what they call entitlements, and Greenspan is particularly talking about retired people here.
Absolutely.
Your pensions are now in some jeopardy. And it might not, I don't mean that this week, but I mean that peers, the pressure is mounting. And sooner or later, somebody, particularly after this election is over, somebody's going to come out and deal with the truth of the matter and say, we got to make some cuts.
Death panels for the old people.
Well, not death panels. We just have to cut their checks, and they'll die on their own. That's all.
Kick them out of here.
We'll create jobs. People will round up the bodies and haul the carcasses off someplace.
Create jobs for the younger people, too.
It'll be something. Exactly.
And that way we can.
That Obama or whoever follows them. We've created 100,000 more jobs. What are they doing? Well, they're picking up the dead bodies.
Mm. Yeah. The IMF had also called, and what's interesting about the IMF, they've really been leading in the headlines as far as their little comments and, you know, sort of dictating what various major central banks and economies and governments should do. But they also called, this is what I found interesting, called on major economies to ready a coordinated contingency stimulus plan, given the host of risks facing the global economy. The G20, though, didn't offer any new prescriptions or signals it has any emergency plans up its sleeve. It's pretty much, yeah, well, you know, hey, we've got taxpayers. That's our emergency plan.
Yeah, right. Plan B. That's our plan B. We've got, if it all goes south, we can get the tax. They're good for it.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they're using the word coordinated.
Yes.
We need to get all of these governments to coordinate their policies. Is that what we're doing here?
Very possibly.
Uh-huh. That's a little like herding cats or something like that. We're going to get all the cats go left, right, and the cats will all march in order.
Well, it also means a coordinated collapse. You know,
it means they're all facing a problem. That's one thing.
Well, I believe it's coordinated, and they will create this coordinated situation in order to create a coordinated plan to fix things.
I don't know that they're going to create it. I'm looking at it from the perspective of this thing. They know this thing is out of control. They're sitting on the edge of it, and they're saying the only way we're going to solve this problem, we got to act in a coordinated manner. And you can bet that just isn't going to happen. We're going to get the Democrats and the Republicans to work together. In this country and in other countries, we're going to get the people who think they're entitled
to
a certain amount of wealth to go along with the people who think they're entitled to keep what they earn?
I don't think it's a matter of whether it's Democrats or Republicans. They don't have a say. They're all controlled. They're just puppets anyway. So, no, I believe the heads of states, whoever controls the things, yeah, I believe they will. If the situation is severe enough, yes, there will be a coordinated plan to usher in whatever they need.
May be a coordinated attempt, but what are they going to do? They've been trying quantitative easing. Japan's been trying it for 25 years. Our government's been trying it for several years.
Well, I think
it hasn't worked anywhere. What are they going? We're all going to do. We're all going to get together, and we're going to be coordinated. Okay, what are we going to? Well, we're going to sing Kumbaya. We're all going to sing Kumbaya at the same time.
No, I believe if a person believes in the New World Order, if a person believes in global government, global, you know, whatever you believe in, monetary policy, global, that they're leading us towards, this will be a way for them to complete with some sort of a coordinated plan. So that was my idea. Yeah, you're right. Everything that they're doing isn't working. But is it by design? Or, you know, hey, if they really wanted to fix things, they never would have bailed out everyone like they did. And they would have fixed the situation when they had the opportunity to. But obviously, there was more benefit to, you know, to the powers to be for wealth, for more control. And, you know, here we are today. And consumer confidence, that fell for the fourth straight month in April. The University of Michigan, their index that was released today registered 89.7 And that was compared with the final for March reading of 91.0. So April's reading was the lowest since September of last year. Oh, so we'll see now that the stock market's returned to the closer to the 18,000 level, whether consumer confidence will rise again later on. But what's interesting is a lot of these economists, so-called, surveyed by the Wall Street Journal, they had expected 92. So they actually expected it to go up. So
Elizabeth Warren was in the news. It says Elizabeth Warren goes on an amazing rant after terrifying reports on big banks. This is Yahoo News. And it goes to, she's complaining after Bloomberg News reported that five of the biggest banks in the nation failed, a major test of whether they could undergo bankruptcy without having a disruptive effect on the entire financial system. Now, Elizabeth Warren, she's a senator from Massachusetts, she's once again sounding the alarm about the scourge of the too-big-to-fail banks. And I don't doubt that she's got a legitimate point here, but one of the things about it, you know, we come back and we say, oh, the big banks, you know, they're manipulative and exploitive and they're not good citizens or whatever. We can blame them for a certain amount of stuff, and I'm not here to defend them. I'm not saying they're good people and they're assists. But one thing you have to recognize is that thanks to the Federal Reserve, we've been running on a near zero interest rate for the last 7 or 8 years. That has to cut into bank profits, and it has to make the banks, you know, there's the poor man's prayer, whatever, Lord, give me enough that I need not steal. When you cut the banks down, when you cut their interest rates down and reduce that line of profit, they've got to find something creative. And by creative, we mean something that is just up on this side of the line that separates criminal from civil. All right. They've been put in a position where they had to do something. And I'm not here to defend them. I'm just saying you got to recognize that when you make near zero interest rate, your policy for 8 years, the banks are going to go broke unless they do something very creative. And it forces them to do things that may expose all of us to a certain amount of jeopardy. So the idea behind this is the banks were supposed to create a will, essentially, of how they can be dismantled in the event they go into bankruptcy without causing great harm to the American economy. And here, what we're saying is that they've been ordered this by law. Whether they could create this will, they haven't done it. They don't have an effective will. If they go bankrupt, too bad. You're all going down with them. That's what it comes down to. And Elizabeth Warren is upset about this. These are living wills. They call them living wills. They're policies for how they'd shut themselves down if driven to bankruptcy, yada, yada. And they're just saying, well, we can't do it, which is they're hanging on to their status as too big to fail. Well, we can sit back and blame them and say they're a bunch of greedy SOBs. But again, you know, who made the interest rates go down to near zero? If you do that, you would deprive people of their income or source of their income. It's almost certain that they will engage in activities that are less than legal. And that's what the banks, to some extent, have done. The announcement is a very big deal. It's scary. This is Elizabeth Warren talking. And that means that unless these banks promptly address concerns identified by the regulators, the government must push these banks to get smaller and less complex. I'm in favor of smaller banks. We talked about this the last day or two. You know, we can have one big bank go down and can take the country with it. If we divide it up into who knows, 50 smaller banks, who cares? A couple of them go broke, they go broke. No big deal. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in a moment with our guest, David Krieger. Talk a little about the $20 gold piece and why it has disappeared. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws dot thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and I was waiting for Melody to open this segment of the program because...
Well, I'm just waiting? So you... I was just waiting for you, Al.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well, I was waiting for Frank, you see, and Frank didn't say anything, but then he never does he?
Well, I was also waiting for Ruby.
Well, Ruby, yeah, but... And who's waiting on us to quit clowning?
No one's waiting for us.
Yeah, they are. We've got a guest, Melody.
We have David Krieger joining us from Hobson MBT, and we welcome him when he joins us. Good afternoon, David.
Hi, Melody. It's good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear you. Alfred is here with us.
Hi, Al.
Hello, David.
I'm experiencing, we were running a great special on Mint State 61 $20 gold pieces. The premiums had dropped, and I lowered my pricing in order to really bring the $20 gold pieces to a very affordable price compared to an American Gold Eagle bullion coin. And they ran out. And
yes.
I found this a little surprising. With the premiums at the levels that they are, and I thought it would be interesting to have you on the program to talk a little bit about that.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I've been here before, Melody, and we always talk about the numismatic coins primarily, the 20 Libs, the 20 Saints, and so on. But I really wanted to mention that, you know, my company, the part of it that says NBT really stands for numismatic and bullion trading. So there's no bias that I have one way or the other. I happen to like numismatic coins, but that doesn't mean I don't like or sell bullion as well. So
and same, Exactly.
I just want to make that point, and, because I think some of your listeners may, if they listen to me long enough, he's always talking about numismatic coins. I was talking about numismatic coins. Well, that's not all I do, but I think for you, that's what we talk about quite a bit, and I'm kind of glad to do that.
But there's a reason why I'd like to talk about $20 gold pieces, because over the years, they have received such a bad reputation, and which I believe they didn't earn that bad reputation. It was the dealers with bad reputations that sold these coins at high prices. They sold rare coins to people that should not have purchased them. It was not suitable for them. So it's real easy for these new people coming into the gold and silver market to say, oh, don't buy them. Well, no, they're a great coin, and we try to provide our clients with an education so they understand the $20 gold pieces and how they work, how they perform. And so that's why I usually like to talk about the $20 gold pieces, just to clear it up and to, so people do diversify in their portfolios.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And in a case in point, you and I earlier in the week had a conversation because the 61s, in fact, were not in the bin anymore. They were gone.
Yeah.
And you kind of got stuck there a little bit. So we did some things and we made it all good. And I think your customers are going to be very happy. But your question to me was, well, what happened to them? And I think that there are enough dealers that pay attention to what the premiums are. And they see from time to time when they're looking around, they're trying to be not just a one product provider. And they took a look at 61 and 62, 20 Libs and 20 Saints, and said, "Wow, that's pretty good deal here." And they've been pushing them, pushing them for all the right reasons. Yeah, mm-hmm. And people are responding and saying that's great. These are historic coins, part of the pre-1933 advantages. They're beautiful coins. They're historic. You have a story. It's part of America that is important to many people, and they've really been doing very well. Now, the way I look at this, I don't know if this is interesting to you, but today, when I plugged in a spot price of gold, which was about $1,232, if you take the melt value of a 20, it's close to $1,200, and a 61 is selling for just a little over $100 and some dollars, well, $150 some dollars over that, as an approximate value, and if you take that. That is against the way we measure it. That is one of the lowest premium percentages that's been going on for a long time. The highest was about 46% in 2009. Now it's someplace around 12%. So, it's kind of an interesting deal to do.
I'm curious, do you think that the in-state 61 coins disappeared because there was such a good deal that demand overcame the supply, was a function of demand, or did they disappear because people just stopped selling them? They wanted to hang on to them. Do you see what I'm saying here? It's two sides of the same coin, but was it too much demand that cleaned out the market or not enough supply?
Well, of course, we don't make any more of those. And, one of my jobs is, of course, to find sources for them, people that are selling them back or whatever it may be. And my cut of it is that demand increased. And, they're not an unlimited supply. That's what makes them valuable. And that's why the premiums go up and go down, depending on what the interest is. So I think the premium had dropped. Melody had, others have seen, hey, that's a good thing for my customers. And she went out, put a special out, and sold some coins. And so it takes a while once they're out of the shelf to replenish. And what that generally means is that the premium goes up because I have to pay more for them.
Yeah. What surprised me is that they were the $61, $20 Liberties. I mean, we usually, when you get premiums like that on Indians, $10 Indians, or, you know, something a little bit more in a limited supply, even the AU $5 Liberty, there's times when, you know, they become in short supply and it's expected.
Yes.
The $61, $20 Liberty, it just wasn't expected because there's quite a few of them. So it was a little bit, even if you go into the Mid-State 64s, Saints, or, and we know the $65, $20 Liberties, they're scarce. You know, so you can sort of, even the Mid-State 63, $20. I mean, anything above a 61 and a 62, you usually come across at one point in time where they come a little bit hard. You have to wait a little bit until the shelf is restocked. So I was a little surprised at the $61, $20 Liberties. So it does tell you no one is selling them.
They're hanging on in anticipation. They think they've got a bargain and the price has to go higher. And or they're thinking that the premiums are too low at this time.
Well, I think that's exactly what it is right there. And when you take a look at a 62 Saint, the premium over melt someplace around the high was someplace around 60%. So that's a heavy deal. That was in 2009. Right now, it's probably down under 20%. That means that for those coins, that's the outlook for the future looks pretty good. I mean, people are buying them, and I think as Melody started out saying, she looks at deals for her customers. And I would say that the 62 Saints are getting to be a pretty good deal. The 64 Saints are actually down a little bit over last year, and that's a super popular coin, and I think that is going to be picking up in sales here in the next couple weeks as well.
If we compare collectible coins to bullion coins, which one does better in times of inflation? Which one does better in times of deflation? Is there a noticeable difference, or do they both move pretty much the same, regardless of there's no bias in terms of inflation versus deflation? Do you follow that?
Yes. Now I'm sitting here trying to recall it. The problem is, let's say that gold was at 1600. And, you bought in American Gold Eagles at gold of 1600. That was probably around 2013, the last time that was, or 2012 when it was 1700. So you bought in, and whatever, the premium above the melt was is what you paid for that American Gold Eagle. Okay, now, at the same time, a 20 Saint in 62 was going for about someplace around 1900, maybe a little bit more. That price of an American Eagle at 1232 is down, what, $450, something like that? And a 20 Saint is not down that much. It's down a couple hundred, maybe. So it depends on a lot of things. American Gold Eagles are pegged to the price of spot gold. Classic collector coins are not. They're based on a more steady value.
Which one is likely to do better if we're sliding into an inflation period right now? Are we more likely to see? I'm going to expect that the bullion coins will more or less rise at least as much of the inflation as the rate of inflation.
Yeah,
I'm going to guess that the collectibles will rise even faster.
I don't know. I can tell you that the bullion coin, if inflation is rising and gold rises as it should, then you will have a increase in the value of the bullion coin. I mean, that's the way it's always worked, and that's good. But that question is, well, in inflation, is gold really going to go up? We hope it does. And, well, you know,
I don't know if Al, I just want to say something. I don't know if Al's question was, I mean, even a gold bullion coin will outpace inflation.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just saying bullion, the inflation will, whatever happens to the bullion coins, that same effect should follow with the collectibles. But, and perhaps even more. I mean, if the bullion coin goes up 10%, the collectible, is it going to go up 20%? Can we expect that? Or 15%? Or will it only go up 10%? Like, just like the bullion. In which case, you know, the collectible is not that much better an investment than the bullion. But if the collectible goes up, you know, bullion is up 10%, collectible is up 20%, now we're talking a better investment.
I think that traditionally in the collector coin market, the numismatics, what you find are people who are very closely following the market, and they'll call me up and say, "Hey, take a look at this. These 64 saints have been really popular. They've been moved away now. The price is down. I want 100." And they'll go out and they'll market them to their people because it's a good buy. But that may not be true of a 63 saint at the same time. So I don't think you can go across the board and say every numismatic coin is going to do better. I think a lot of it depends on what is the collector market doing and how's that working out. But generally, in rising prices of gold, numismatics will go just like bullion coins.
All right. In you talk about $10 Indians are a good example of when the coins are taken out of the market, the premiums tend to work higher and so on. Mm. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Do I? Sure. Right now, there's a lack of interest, I would say, in 62-10 Indians. It just isn't something that anybody has a particular interest in. As a result, over last year, a 10 Indian in 62 is down $135, roughly. Makes it fairly attractive. If you're trying to accumulate gold, you like 10 Indians. And you know that a 62 certified coin is a good deal. I'd be looking at accumulating 62s. The 63s are up. So, what's the difference? Well, I think that a 63-10 Indian is a good buy, but it's not as good of a buy as a 62 right now. There are fewer.
You know, David, I had 63 $10 Indians on specials when they were. I was selling them retail for, I think they were slightly below $900.
Yeah.
And they were a good deal not too long ago. They were a really good deal. Now they're
last January or January 14 and mid 14. I think that's when it was, wasn't it?
Oh, it was last year. They were just really good too. In the middle of like July, in the middle of the summer, I believe it was.
Yeah.
You know, so they've done. They were off their lows from I think a year ago, but but compared to what their price is today, they were a steal.
Yeah,
David, would you like to? We've got 30 seconds left in this.
And we didn't get to talk about British sovereigns or.
We always run out of time.
Well, can you come back? We'll be back on the commercial will be over in 2.5 minutes or so. Can you stick around for the next segment?
I'd be happy to.
Good, good. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Our guest is David Krieger, who wholesales numismatic and bullion coins, and we will be talking more with David in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom and our guest David Krieger, who wholesales gold collectible and bullion coins. And we've been posing a number of questions for David. One of them that crosses my mind, another one is this. I'm going to guess you have a perspective on this that this is not available to me. What's the difference, if there is any difference, between the sale of gold coins domestically within the United States and the sale of gold coins in Europe, for example? Is there a significant difference, or are they pretty much just moving in lockstep?
Well, I think they kind of are similar. For instance, many of the gold coins that we have here in America, the Swiss 20 francs, the sovereigns, those are very popular in Europe, and essentially we source them from there. We have a place in Brussels that we purchase and bring coins back, and that's what's over there. So when Greece went into all its financial difficulties, you couldn't find a sovereign over there. They were basically being held very closely by the Europeans because they remember World War II, that was the only real source of value they had. And for a while, we were sending sovereigns back to Europe, making a market over there. So we weren't the only ones. There were other companies doing the same thing. So I would say that just like a lot of products, they move across the international boundaries without any problem.
Do we sell more sovereigns in this country when other coins kind of disappear? Do sovereigns kind of come into this country when the demand increases, but the supply of domestic collectibles is not matching the demand?
Well, in the last, 20 years or, 19 years I've been doing this, I've sold literally millions of dollars in Swiss francs and British sovereigns. There's a steady demand for them, but they serve a purpose, I think, that is something that may not be for everybody, but yeah, it's for a lot of people, and they're very popular. In comparison, it's a fractional gold coin. The British sovereign, for instance, has an actual gold weight of 0.2354. So it's just a little under a quarter of an ounce of gold. So the price of a British sovereign is roughly a quarter of what a 1 ounce gold coin would be. But as you get smaller denomination American Gold Eagles, for instance, the percentages go up significantly. And the British sovereign for the same amount of gold usually is a more favorable price. So a lot of people who want fractional gold coins look at the British sovereign and the Swiss franc. And in our economy, we have lots of them. They're easy to store. If something goes wrong and you have to use them for barter or trade, you know, it's easier to come up and say, hey, I've got this coin worth $290 to $350, whatever gold is. And, you know, basically makes it easier than handing somebody a 1 ounce gold coin and saying, hey, do you have change for a 2000? And so that there's a lot of popularity with those coins. And to your specific question, do they flow in or, you know, when nothing else around? No, there's a consistent market for both of them because they're very popular. They're well recognized and they're a lot of fun to hold. Basically, people get surprised. You put 40 British sovereigns in a 1x1x3-inch tube. It's a tube that's designed to hold $2 in or $10 in quarters, American quarters, and 40 British sovereigns fit into that same tube. And you take a look at it, and you're looking at $12,000 in a something you hold in the fist of your hand. But the purpose is as an insurance policy, when things go south, you have something that's more valuable than a silver round or an American silver eagle, which certainly have their places, and one that fits between the 2000 and up American gold eagles or maple leafs that have other purposes.
Well, the fundamental those purposes would be when you have gold, it's easier to hide it, it's easier to move it, and it's better for paying off large items. You can buy a new car with gold, or a used car with gold. You can buy a house with gold, or a piece of land with gold. You want to buy some hot dogs and buns for a cookout tonight, you're probably going to look after, you want some silver. All right, to make the smaller purchases. But the problem with silver, 80 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold right now, on the roughly, that translates into something like, what is it, 5 pounds of silver has the same value as 1 ounce of gold.
Mm. Well,
that's a problem. I mean, well, if you have any interest in trying to conceal that, you're going to have to get a bigger safe or a bigger hole in the ground or whatever to accommodate all that silver.
Sure. Ask anybody that buys mint-sealed boxes of silver. They have to find a place to store it, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they weigh, what, 55 pounds a box, and, they're big. But silver eagles have a great purpose, and I think they're a wonderful coin and all. But what we're really talking about is three types of bullion coin that really serve three different purposes. I think it's very common, for instance, for people to have silver bullion for all the purposes we've talked about over the years. American gold eagles or maples, good coins have their purpose, but you need something in between, I think. And so a lot of people have a tube that they have the fractional gold coins in. And I don't think you need a lot of them, but I think it would make sense to have some of them. I frequently recommend, hey, if you're going to buy 1,000 silver eagles and 20 or 30 American gold eagles, throw in 50 sovereigns, and then you got all your bases covered and you have a lot of options.
And you're saying essentially that you get a better deal on the sovereigns right now than you do on the fractional U.S. eagles.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of interesting coins. We primarily sell what are called a George the Fifth, and they're a neat coin and nice BU coin, brilliant uncirculated. You know, they really got a history to them, too. That's what they used to carry in the precursor to the CIA in Europe during World War II, the OSS used to carry them. If they went, they had a problem, they always had a sovereign, and everybody knew what that was worth. And I think here, not too far off the same story.
But I can remember my introduction to sovereigns, English sovereigns, goes back probably, I don't know, 40 years ago, when maybe a little bit more than that, when they did the James Bond movie from Russia with Love. And he was carrying that secret attaché case that had sovereigns, a roll of sovereigns hidden inside the case. Yep. That he could use in case of problems, and allegedly provided all their secret agents. So it was probably
even our special forces have carried them overseas, and they're mm-hmm. carrying them in Afghanistan and Iraq, as I understand it. I wasn't there, but I understand that that was still being carried. Yeah, and you know what's neat about them? I pointed this out to more than one person. People who have, let's say I have a knowledge of people who have a shoebox full of sovereigns and Swiss francs. Now, that shoebox holds about today $300,000 in those coins. If something happens to that person, the survivors can go down to any number of places, trade those in, and they have instant cash. Yeah. It's less tempting than having an envelope full of cash in your safe. It's and it's a long term store that basically is easy to trade, and it's not reportable. It's just as easy as going out and selling a bike to your neighbor.
Yeah,
it's a great way to distribute wealth.
Mm-hmm. Main thing about it though is you got to keep your mouth shut. If you get the shoebox, best not to tell all the kids and all the relatives and all the family, because they're going to tell other people.
Yeah.
And it's one of the if you're going to hold your own gold, you've got to learn to button your own lips. You know how to keep a secret, Melody? You don't tell anyone.
When you tell two people, it's guaranteed you might as well tell everybody.
Yeah, I know, because if it's not, doesn't mean enough to you to keep the secret, why should it make it? I'm going to tell you a secret now. Look, if it's so secret, if I don't think it's secret enough to resist telling anyone else, why should they resist telling their friends? Mm. No, so it's one of those things you have to, takes a little secrecy if you're going to hang on to this, but if you can, you can protect yourself in a way that's almost spectacular to what's likely to happen to everyone else who's investing in paper debt instruments. I mean, they are in jeopardy, and they may be free to talk about it, but I don't think they're talking about the liability the risk they're taking by storing their wealth in paper rather than something tangible like gold or silver.
There you go.
Where do you think the markets are headed, Dave?
Well, I don't know. Melody will tell you this. I have no insight whatsoever. I've made deals, locked in gold at a certain price, and 2 hours later it was down. So I don't know. What do I think? I think that the long term for gold is very robust, and it just goes back to the fundamentals that I think are there. You can't have a national debt as we have. You can't have unemployment as we have. You can't have the chaos that's going on as we see it without just the commodities going to be reflecting increased prices. I just that's my gut feeling. Do I know that?
Absolutely.
No, but that's my gut feeling.
No, I don't doubt for a minute. I don't doubt for a minute that you're correct. The price is going higher in large measure because the dollar is going lower. The question, I think everyone listening to this program can see that fundamental reality. And we all know that sooner or later, that gold is going to be, it's going to preserve your wealth, and it's going to increase considerably compared to where it's to the value it has at the moment. But the question is, when?
Mm.
All right? Everybody knows what's going to happen here. We know the end of the movie, but when do we get to the movie? Is this a one-hour movie, a two-hour movie, or a four-hour movie?
You have see, that's why, Melody's doing a great job doing this in terms of looking at these things and encouraging. I think this is the way I see it, her listeners, to serve them with good opportunities. I mean, this last week of seizing the deal on the 61 Saints and Libs was a good deal. And I think we need to continue to do that. You can't wait till the last minute.
I understand that. When do you think, what is a last minute scenario? Does gold just disappear? Does price go so high that it becomes almost unaffordable for most people? Or does it go so high that it just flat out disappears and you can't even find any? Is that an irrational possibility?
Well, I think, you know, you just have to listen in to some of the major institutions who are buying large quantities of gold and actually taking physical delivery of it. I think that kind of answers the question that, what is going to be short? They don't seem to be affecting the numismatic and the fractional market as much as they could if they all of a sudden they start buying tons of gold and putting them in their depositories. I don't think that gold is going to ever go away. I think that gold is going to the scenario I see is gold is going to become rare, more prized value. As our dollar is in more trouble, and I think we're looking at a rocky road ahead for the next minimum of 8 to 10 years. I think it's scary, frankly, and I think that now with prices as they are, it's a great time to accumulate. It's kind of like an insurance policy. You know, if you never need it, great, but you've got it, and now's the time. I think a good time right now to start that accumulation and put in a little bit more to sock it away.
You know, it's not just the insurance policy analogy. This is better than an insurance policy because the day will come when maybe we don't have a calamity. We don't need the gold because there isn't going to be a calamity, but you can still sell the gold for what you invested in, and you can't do that with an insurance policy. You can hang on to an insurance policy for 3-5 years, but you can't cash it back in and collect your payments. You can with gold. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank Dave Krieger for being here, our guest. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Dave Krieger, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have.